Hello, and welcome to Zero Point Radio. This is Jim Moffat. Those of you who are familiar with the program and listen on a regular basis know that at this time you're usually hearing the voice of Christopher Holmes, who is the creator of Zero Point Radio and is the prime contributor. But today, Christopher's eldest daughter, Allison, my goddaughter, is getting married in Ottawa, Ontario, so he's not available today. So he's asked me to sit in, and hopefully I'm going to be joined by our friend Odin Townley, who, if he's out there, I hope he'll give us a call. Odin has graciously consented to join me today, but we're having a little trouble hooking up with him. However, we're very lucky today because Chris was able to get our friend Robert Bruce to come on to talk about his fascinating and intriguing work, and I think that that our listeners will be very interested in Robert's work. It's quite extraordinary exploration of human energy and out-of-body experiences, clairvoyance, healing, psychic self-defense, and a variety of related topics. Robert, are you there?
I'm here. Good to be on the show.
Well, welcome. I should mention that Robert is the author of several books, Astral Dynamics, Practical Psychic Self-Defense, and most recently, Energy Work. And he's also co-authored a book with Brian Mercer called Mastering Astral Projection. Robert has a very, very interesting and informative website. I was just visiting it in the past couple of weeks. It's www.astraldynamics.com. And Robert, I was fascinated by the overview of your work. It's quite fascinating. I guess I should just ask you to begin. What is your background, and how did you come to be involved in this work?
That's a long story, as I usually tend to be. I started having out-of-body experiences when I was about 4 years old, spontaneously. And this continued all through my childhood and teens. And then I taught myself to induce them in my early 20s. Which was a whole different ball game to having spontaneous ones. And I've just kind of gone on from there and exploring the greater reality. And, then I accidentally wrote a book. and I did. My first book was accidental. I discovered the internet in about 1994. And started my website up, astrodynamics.com, and I started hanging around news groups and things that dealt with astral projection and related topics. And I started answering questions, and it generated a huge amount of mail because people recognized that I knew what I was talking about through personal experience. And in order to cut the email down, I wrote a series of articles, to cover the frequently asked questions. And then I rewrote it, series two, and long story short, I ended up accidentally writing a book, and then I accidentally bumped into my publisher, Frank DeMarco of Hampton Roads, on the internet. And and he published my first book. And, and it sort of went on from there.
Well, that's, as somebody who struggled for many years to write a book, the idea of accidentally writing one is rather fascinating to me. But was that Astral Dynamics? Was that your first book?
Yes, Astral Dynamics was my first book. And after we published that one, I had a debate, more of an argument, with the chief editor of Hampton Roads at the time, and because I had several chapters in Astral Dynamics, which was originally over 1,000 pages, on psychic self-defense, as I thought at the time, a duty of care. And we started this big debate over the validity of that sort of work on psychic self-defense, and I'm talking 20-page email going back with and forwards with a couple of dozen people looking on, refereeing, publishers and experts in the field. And I won the argument and got quite hot-headed and was kind of banging the table. And I said, if I wrote this book, I'd do it my way and bang, and I'd do this and I'd do that. And my publisher, Frank, said, and we'll publish it. Here's the contract. And so the second book kind of accidentally written, and the third was deliberate.
Well, that's good.
I had two books come out this year in June. One was Energy Work, which you've mentioned, and the other one is Mastering Astral Projection Audio Companion, which I co-authored again with Brian Mercer. We did the original Mastering Astral Projection 90-day guide together, which is a step-by-step 90-day guide for OBE. And the Audio Companion is brilliant. It's actually a very good companion for the book Energy Work because it's a 6-CD set with a book, The Mastering Astral Projection Audio. And it's part of what it does. It talks you through the energy work with altered state-inducing sound. And so combined, it's the same energy work as in the book Energy Work. So it talks you through the basics of that. So they go very well together.
Yeah, I see. So it's an audio tutorial as a guide to astral projection.
Yeah, the purpose is astral projection, but the basics of energy work and that are used in all of my books, and that talks you through it. So it's a handy companion for it.
Yeah, I have to say that when I first started exploring your work, my impression was that, you know, I heard astral, and of course I had an association to astral projection and astral dynamics, and I was a little bit surprised by the very basic kind of down to earth, very practical and very accessible and approachable nature of the instruction in your energy work. I think it's very well presented, and as you make the point over and over again, look, this is not something that is beyond the scope of most people. It's actually quite easy to follow this and to practice this if you're willing to invest the time and the effort.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very accessible, and it's deliberately coined that way. I made a discovery concerning energy work 15 years or so ago. It's what I call tactile imaging. And this is the foundation of all the energy work I teach. And it's very, very simple, very easy to do. I can literally teach it in a few minutes so that you can feel energy yourself. And my record is about 2 minutes with a bank teller. In fact, it was two bank tellers at the Royal Bank of Canada. I was there a few months ago, and I was depositing a couple of checks. And they asked me what I did, and you know, goes on to write, and then what do I write about? And I said about, you know, astral projection, energy work, and they said, oh, that's interesting. You know, and anyway, apparently all of the tellers in this particular branch of the bank were studying Reiki and things like that. So the whole bank was, like, into it. And I said, would you like me to show you what I do? And they said, oh, okay. So I got both of them to put their hands out, and I took them through an exercise, and in under 3 minutes, they were feeling energy so strongly they could barely use their keyboards.
Wow.
Well, would you like me to talk to you? It takes a long time to explain about energy work, but I can talk to your listeners through a demonstration.
I think that's a terrific idea. Yeah, sure, go ahead.
But just before I do that, very, very quickly, the principle of tactile imaging, the energy work I teach, is a fundamental principle of moving energy. It's a fundamental method, and it can be applied to any other method. Once you learn my method, which you can learn very, very quickly, you can apply it to Reiki, Qigong, Tai Chi, quantum touch, any form of healing, any form of energy work will be enhanced by it. For example, if you take up a Chinese art like Qigong, also Qigong, they call it, or Tai Chi. In Qigong, for example, Iron Shirt Qigong, they say after the introductory lessons, if you practice, do these practices every day for a year, which is like 365 hours, you will begin to start feeling significant quantities of energy moving through your body.
Right.
Now, if you spend half an hour learning my system, if you go to your first lesson at Qigong, you will feel energy strongly, immediately, because you the penny has dropped and you know how to move energy. Now, the problem comes from many, many years ago when a lot of Eastern esoteric texts were brought to the West 100 or so years ago, and including yoga and stuff like that. And now, when you these texts were translated, I think the nearest equivalent for their terms and words for moving energy and the description of the moving energy was to visualize. Now, the word visualize is has inherent problems with it in the West here, to start with. Now, when you're asked to visualize something, the majority of people think they can't visualize well. And I've taught thousands of people, and this is a common theme. And because of the word visualization, they think that when they visualize something, they have to actually see it, like a little TV in the mind. But visualization is not a visual ability. If you actually see anything in your mind when you're visualizing something, that is a form of clairvoyance, of mind's eye vision. It's a different thing. Visualization is imagination. It's pure fantasy. Now, any child can visualize, and everybody, without exception, can visualize perfectly, 100%. And when you imagine something, you can imagine a tree, for example, in great detail, down to every leaf and every little twig, but you don't actually see it visually. But it's quite a profound thing. You can imagine in great detail. But this is what visualization is. This is what it's meant to be. Now, the other part of this about moving energy that I discovered, I call it tactile imaging. And what that is, and I think this was originally intended by these systems, I think it's taught in the native languages, it comes across better there, whereas it doesn't come across so well when it's translated into Western languages. And tactile imaging is something I discovered accidentally about 15 years ago when I was just experimenting on myself during meditation. And the principle is, if you focus your awareness of your physical body, if you focus in a particular point, let's say you focus in your left index finger, and you give it a little wiggle, and you focus it, and you close your eyes, and you feel for that finger, and you find you can feel the outline of that finger very, very intensely, to the point where, even with your eyes closed, you can touch your nose, you know, with your eyes closed with that finger. And you're quite aware of it, and you'll find, if you do that over an area where there's a lot of nerves, which means there's a lot of energy activity, you'll find you get a little bit of a tingle, a little bit of a heaviness in there, a tightness, sometimes a prickling. And what you're doing is, by focusing your attention on the physical body, you're stimulating the energy body in that area. And it will cause a bit of stimulation. And what causes most of the sensations you will feel is a nerve stimulation. You focus your attention on something, and it's called pre-movement nerve firing, or neurofiring. And the nerves basically charge up, ready to move. But you don't move. With tactile imaging, you move that point of awareness through the body. So you would, say, move your point of awareness up and down through a finger. And that, as that point of awareness moves backwards and forwards through the finger, the nerves in the finger are continually charging and discharging. Now, this causes a lot of bioelectrical activity in the finger, in the physical body, which causes some unusual sensations. Now, beneath the surface of the physical body, in the subtle template of the energetic body, this causes direct stimulation of the energy body. And using this method, it allows you to come to grips with your energy body, to feel it inside and out, to feel for blockages, to clear blockages, to raise energy, for self-healing. And if you apply this method over a primary energy center, say a chakra, you will activate it. No two ways about it. It's a very, very powerful system. But now, the explanation can get a bit long-winded if you go into detail, but it's actually child's play to learn. And I'll give a demonstration now to your listeners, and it only takes a few minutes.
Yeah, that'd be fine. Go ahead.
Cool. Well, put out your left hand, rest it on your lap or your desk with your palm up and your fingers out, and hold it out in front of you. And take the fingertips of your right hand and drape them over the top of it. And what I want you to do is to brush the surface of your left hand with the fingertips of your right hand from the wrist to your fingertips, all of the fingers of the right hand. And just brush the top of your left hand. Now focus on the feel you're causing, the sensation you're causing as your fingers drag along the left hand. And just close your eyes for a moment and feel that touch that you're causing, the sensation. And we're in a minute, we'll keep doing this. In a minute, we're going to stop physically touching that hand and we're going to start moving the feel alone through it. We'll just do it a couple more times, stroking the palm of the left hand with the right fingertips. Now stop physically touching it and keep moving the feel, that residual sensation that you were causing. Move the feel backward and forward through your left hand from your fingertips to your wrist. It's quite easy to do. Just move the feel of that touch. Repeat the touching, brushing exercise if you need to until you can identify that sensation you're causing, moving backward and forwards in your left hand, and then move the sensation alone. You find it's quite easy to do. Fingertips to wrist, backward and forwards through your left hand. And keep doing this. It only takes a... You can look at it. Your eyes can be open or closed. A lot of people find it's easier to do if they look at it to start with. But keep doing this for just a minute and you'll find some unusual sensations start up in the left hand. You'll feel a slight heaviness, a prickling, a tingling, a little buzzing, a vibration, a warmth or a cool sensation. It varies from person to person. But keep doing this, and it'll get stronger and stronger as you get used to moving your energy through your hands. Right, now take both hands together and rub them together, and shake your fingers a little bit as if you're shaking water off of them. And make fists out of both hands and focus on the feeling you're causing in them and put both hands out, palm up on your desk or your lap or hold them out in front of you. Hold both hands out. Now, focus on the residual sensation you caused in them by clenching them. And then, as we did with the one hand, with two hands together simultaneously, move your awareness through your hands, fingertips to wrists, both hands simultaneously. Fingertips to wrists, through the whole of both hands, through all the flesh and muscle and bones. Take it through both hands, backwards and forwards, moving the feel through it. And you find one side of your body is more sensitive than the other, so one you may feel more sensation in one hand than the other. Keep doing it. And then take the small part of your awareness to do this. It doesn't take a lot of concentration. You don't need to be in an altered state for this. You can do it when you're standing up, walking, anything. And you'll feel some sensations building up. The degree of sensitivity varies from person to person. Some people develop a stuck energy around them, and it takes a little bit of effort to work through. But 99% of people will feel this. Are you following this exercise?
Yep. Sorry?
Are you following this exercise yourself?
Yes, I am.
Good. How are your hands feeling?
I'm getting prickling and pulsing in both my hands. I don't notice a huge difference, but a little bit more pronounced in the left than the right.
yeah, this is more noticeable in some people than others, but you can definitely feel the sensations there.
Yes.
Now, this is partly caused by your physical nerves and partly by your energy body. That's why the sensations vary. Now, keep doing this. It only takes a part of your mind to do this. And a lot of people, probably about 30% of people, will also find, just while they're doing this exercise and the next one we do, they'll find a little tickling sensation will start up in the middle of their chest, over the heart, or over the in the middle of the brow, in the forehead, or right at the top of the head, in the center of the crown. A little tickling, tingling sensation. This might also be accompanied by a little pulsing sensation in those areas, in one or all of these areas. And these are the primary energy centers, the chakras in those areas, activating just by this exercise, because the hands and arms are very strongly connected with the higher energy centers. And just stimulating them, you cause, you open the floodgates to a much stronger flow of energy going into your body, and this is enough to activate those centers. And this residual sensation, it can continue for a day or two after you've just doing what we've done now.
I can feel it in my brow.
You feel a little tingling or throbbing?
Yeah.
Which one?
In the brow.
What are you feeling, a tingling or pulsing?
Like a pulsing.
Yeah. How about the middle of the top of your head?
I have something on the top of my head, too.
Yeah.
I feel it in both my brow and in the top of my head.
Right in the middle of it. Do you feel like a little tickling there or a little pulsing?
Yeah, more like a pulse than a tingle.
Yeah, yeah. That's the most common, or the heart center as well.
Mm.
Now, lift up both your hands and facing each other and imagine that you are cupping your hands around a tennis ball with your fingers, not quite touching. Almost touching. And just imagine there's a bright blue tennis ball there spinning around between your hands. And hold it there and just feel with your hands as if you were trying to detect minute changes in air temperature and air movement. If you want to catch every little gust and really sense with your hands while you imagine this ball of energy spinning around between them. Yeah, really sense with those hands and put all your awareness in them. You'll find that the sensations you'll be getting will increase a little because you're starting to sense with your hands. Just imagine that ball building up. Now, the ball stays where it is. Now, move your hands about 18 inches to 2 feet apart, facing each other, and the ball is in the middle. Just imagine it being there. And now I want you to imagine and feel that energy ball moving from left to right and bouncing off each of your hands about half to 1 second each way. Just imagine this energy ball bouncing off each of your hands. If you're bouncing a real tennis ball, just feel it and imagine it moving. We're combining imagination with energy movement here, which adds quality and intention to the energy action. And keep sensing with those hands as if you were trying to detect every little change in air temperature. And you don't want to miss any. Your hands will charge up. Right, stop that now. And just put your hands together, rub your hands together a little bit. Now hold your hands apart again, about 2 feet apart, and really sense with your hands. And again, like you were trying to detect minute changes in air temperature. There's no energy ball there now, don't imagine it. Now move your hands in and out so they're almost touching, and then take them apart 2 feet apart again and move them slowly together and out again. And really sense with your hands. And as you move them together, you will feel little veils of resistance. And when they get close together, you'll feel a little prickling, a little pressure and a little prickling, tingling energy exchange as you feel your own energy field. Just move them in and out, and you'll feel that resistance there. It's like this little pressure area, so little areas of temperature and texture you're moving through as you come almost to touching and then out again. Really sensing with them. You feel a reaction between them. And this is much more effective if you've got two people and you stand about 6 feet apart, hold your hands up facing each other, and move in and out fairly rapidly. Take a step in and move your hands in so they're almost touching the other person's, and then move out 6 feet again and then move back in again. And you will find as you come in from 6 feet out or further even, depending on the strength of the person, you will find different layers and textures, and you actually feel the energy field, the aura you could call it, of the other person, particularly when you get within 6 inches or so of their hands. When you get very close, you'll feel a little warmth about when you're about 2 inches away. That's like infrared heat, a physical heat coming off the other person's hands. But that little prickling, buzzy, and those little textures on that you'll feel as you come in and out, you're feeling the layers of the energy body. And that's the demonstration. It's a lot of fun to do. But what I do in the energy work book is, beginning with this, I take you through working through the feet. We work through every toe and every finger, and then through the legs and the joints and other parts of the body. And we free up the energy body by bouncing energy through it and in various ways. And you create an increased flow of energy through the body. And with this increased flow of energy, we use this. You can store this energy in various storage energy areas in your body. And you can also transmit energy, project energy into another person for healing. And also, this also brings you into touch. We then start working with the primary energy centers, the major chakras, and start stimulating those. And this works into a whole body system, a whole body way, which is very, very safe and reliable for stimulating the energy body. And it has enormous health benefits, and benefits for spiritual development and psychic development as well.
You still there?
Yes.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you had finished or not. Even the exercise is very interesting because I felt the tingling, and I felt, as I said, I felt the pulse in my brow and in the top of my head. And when I was moving my hands in and out, I could feel, as my hands grew closer together, I could actually feel sort of a heat and a tingling. And I could, you know, it's interesting just moving them in and out. The sensation was very interesting. It was something quite, like, I was much, much obviously more aware of my hands because I was focused on them. But I noticed I went through, when I was going through some of your material, that the exercises are very direct and they're, like I say, they're very easy to do. But also, I really like this point that you make about visualization. It's interesting because I actually did my honors thesis in psychology on visual imagery and discovered that I have absolutely awful visual imagery. Well, I already knew that, but I confirmed it. But I think I have a very good imagination, and so it's quite easy for me to imagine things, but I can't actually visualize them at all.
Well, visualization, if it, the word is probably even barely explained in the school you went to. It is assumed to be a visual thing. But if you see anything visually, with your eyes closed in your mind's eye, that is a mind's eye vision ability. That's a form of clairvoyance.
Right.
Or like a type of awake lucid dream ability. It is not normal, but every child can visualize perfectly. Every adult can have a vivid imagination or vivid fantasies in great detail, down to the every hair on a person's head. You know, with all the senses engaged in that, but you don't actually see anything per se.
Yeah.
And I've come across probably the majority of the people I've taught I make a point of going through this at the beginning because it's like a huge amount of people think they can't visualize, and consequentially, they, you know, if you look at the that in the New Age spiritual world, all of the exercises, every single one of them, are based upon visualization. I mean, apart from the physical posturing and the breathing and that, let's say visualize energy coming up your legs, say a blue ball of energy coming up through your legs. But if you can't visualize or believe you can't visualize, because basically it's been poorly taught in the West. And, you know, if you can't visualize well, you think you can't really do the exercise. And you will try and imagine it and try and keep up with this. You think what you think you're doing wrong. But, I mean, you're shot in the foot from the start because you think you can't do it. You don't think you're doing it right. Your confidence is down and you're trying to do these it could be a yoga exercise, for example, or you're doing a Qigong exercise or quantum touch, anything. You're told to visualize energy moving up and down through the body. And, you know, because of the visualization hasn't been explained properly, and it hasn't been explained that everybody can do it perfectly right now, you know, and once you understand that, it's everybody's on the same level, and all of these Eastern disciplines and that work very, very well once you understand this with a little bit of instruction.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, too, and just in that exercise, I could feel that ball going back and forth off my hands, you know. I had no problem at all doing that, and it was very realistic to me. But this kind of brings me, I just wanted to ask you a little bit more. I'm really quite interested in, for a variety of reasons, in this idea of tactile imaging, because it strikes me as being quite different from, let's say, some of the yoga, quote-unquote, visualization exercises where you're moving energy around the body and focusing on different, because you actually tell people to use a ruler or their hand or whatever, a pencil to actually make a physical impression on a part of the body. And that strikes me as being a very interesting departure from what I understand about most bodily awareness kind of esoteric approaches.
Well, that's what we did at the start here, where I got you to brush the fingertips of one hand over the palm of the left hand, is physically touching it. And we only use a pen or a ruler. If you want to scratch, say, at your big toe and you can't quite reach it, you use a ruler or something like that, just to give it a little bit of a rub to cause a sensation. I mean, if you want to work on your feet, you would wiggle your toes and rub them on the floor to cause a residual sensation in them. And then you focus on the sensation you've caused by stamping your feet or whatever, and that helps to target your body awareness there. And then you can move that residual feeling backward and forward through the feet or up and down through the legs. And when you get the hang of this, you don't need to scratch or rub the area that you're working on. You can just automatically go there. These are just aids to teaching you how to do it.
Yeah, and it's, you know, in some yoga exercises I've done, it almost sounds like in the context of that, like it's cheating, but it's just so much easier. Like you say, if you want to target an area, leave a residual physical impression that helps to focus it and increases awareness of that area. So it's just much easier to, and as you say, as you get more practiced at doing it and have better control, you won't need the ruler or the pencil or the rubbing to actually do it. But I just say that it's just so commonsensical. I really like that, actually.
It is common sense. I mean, what you were just describing then in yoga, in all Eastern disciplines and practices and that you are told to visualize energy moving up and down through your body in various ways. Now, what's happened here is the translation problem I mentioned earlier is that the yoga teacher has been taught by their yoga teacher, who was taught by their yoga teacher. All of these people were poorly instructed, I should say. This is no offense to the teachers of these systems. It comes down to the translation. When they were translated from Hindu or whatever language they were in before, when it came down, the word visualization, it was just like assumed that the people knew how to do it and that it's a visual thing. And it has never been really defined properly and explained properly. And just what I've said so far on this, if you apply this to yoga and you teach your students, and I've done this with in yoga classes and Qigong classes, Tai Chi classes, Kung Fu classes, And if you give the new students this instruction, they immediately get it. They immediately start moving energy big time. And they can keep up, and their progress is far more rapid than it would otherwise be. And to the point where you have to actually be careful, because the exercises then become very powerful at a very early stage. And, you know, then you need to take greater care that you don't overwork the energy body, because in the Eastern systems, you'll find there's quite a lot of emphasis on stimulating the higher chakras, the higher energy centers like the brow center. Now, these instructions come from hundreds of years ago, sometimes even thousands of years ago, and they come from a culture that was heavily grounded, heavily agricultural society. And in people that are heavily grounded, that don't have a lot of mental stimulation, of course, you have to work harder to get the higher centers out of dormancy. But in the Western world, we are heavily mentally stimulated through television and computers and music and the types of work we do, and to the point where the higher centers are naturally a lot more active. So if you push them too hard, you'll find you can develop predictable problems using tactile imaging methods, which are very powerful, much more powerful than the methods I teach than any other method out there. But any of them, they just don't compare in the speed and efficiency of energy work. But, of course, the system that I teach, it can be applied to anything else. Once you learn the principles of this, you can apply this to your yoga, you can apply these methods to your Qigong, to your Tai Chi, to any form of healing, to Reiki. It'll make your Reiki work better. Because if you can move energy through your body, and energy can move more freely through your body, with Reiki, when a Reiki healer does healing, they tune into a frequency of energy in various ways and channel this healing frequency into the patient they're giving healing to. And if your body can move energy better, then, of course, you're going to get a much stronger flow of Reiki energy going through you because of the because your energy body has been is much better prepared and can move energy better.
That was one of the interesting stories I liked in your tutorial, that someone was who had been getting Reiki treatment was able to move energy into a certain point in their body, I think in their lower back, and the Reiki's healer's hand started to shake.
Yeah.
That struck me as being.
Yes, I remember that one. Yeah,
quite a fascinating testimony to this idea. I guess it's what really interests me is that this, as you say, this supplements other approaches, and there's a real integration with other approaches. And yet, at the same time, you can teach people who are complete beginners, complete novices, in a very short amount of time. How to move energy and how to summon energy and even how to store energy. And that to me is quite fascinating. I should actually, just before we go on, Robert, I should just mention that this is Zero Point Radio on BBS, and we actually have call-in numbers. Would you be interested in hearing from some callers if somebody's got wants
sure.
to call in and ask a question? There are toll-free numbers. In the U.S., it's 877-876-5227, and in Canada, it's 888-815-9756. So if there's anybody out there who has a question for Robert or a comment and would like to call in, we'd love to hear from you. There's so many different questions. One thing that you talk about in your system, when you were talking about the chakras, but also you talk about secondary and tertiary systems within the body. Perhaps you could just speak to that for a moment.
Well, you have primary energy centers, the seven major chakras, I call them. There's actually a few more than that if you work through them. But apart from the large centers here, you've also got secondary ones, which are quite large, in every joint in your body, including every joint in your finger, your wrist, your elbows, your shoulders, your hips, and they vary in size. And you also have, these are all connected together by a complex meridian system, which has been very well laid out by Taoist acupuncture. You've got the meridians that they use are quite accurate. In that sense, and what I call the tertiary ones, or energy exchange pores, as I call them now, where you have high concentrations of nerves in the body, like on the palms of the hands, undersides of the fingertips, in the lips, in the feet, in the genitals, other areas where you have high concentrations of nerve cells, you find there is a lot of energy movement there. And with your hands and feet particularly, these areas exchange energy with the environment and with other people rapidly. Your feet, for example, exchange energy with the planetary energy that we stand on. The hands, and the feet, by the way, and the legs, they are connected more strongly into the lower chakras, the base, the navel, and the solar plexus, whereas the hands, as you've discovered, by just working on the hands, it's causing activation in your brown crown center. They are obviously connected to the higher chakras, the heart, throat, brown crown, which is demonstrable and repeatable. And the tertiary energy centers of the in the palms of the hands tend to seem to exchange energy with the environment around us, with the particularly the atmosphere, atmospheric energy. And on the crown of the head area, there is an exchange of energy goes on with what you could call cosmic energy, I suppose, coming from above. But the whole energy body is a fascinating complex mechanism, every bit as complex as the human nervous system.
Yeah, I don't know if you actually get into, do you get into the higher being bodies, the beyond the etheric, like the astral, causal, and subtle, in terms of the actual physical work that you do?
I do work on these levels. I do a lot of work with the astral body and the etheric body and the expanded etheric body, which is produced, which is the part of you. I think Robert Monroe called it the second body.
Right.
When you're in a state where astral projection or out-of-body experience can occur, your etheric body, the basic underlying vitality template, expands and consciousness shifts into this energy body while the physical body mind falls asleep, and it is this second body that produces the projectable double. It projects the astral body out. By the way, I have a new venture on my web. If you go to my website and you look at the middle of the front page, called the Hall of Learning.
Oh yes, yes.
We started an online mystery school teaching energy work, astral projection, self-healing and healing, and currently running a course for a practical astral projection intensive. It's a 5-week course.
Oh, okay.
And the next one, we're currently running a course. The next one starts on the 10th of November.
Okay. And that's at www.astraldynamics.com?
Yeah, astraldynamics.com on the Hall of Learning. It's right
Hall of Learning,
there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fascinating. I just took a look at that the other day. That's really, really interesting. I would urge all our listeners to go to Robert's website and check this out. And so the next course is starting on November the 10th, is that right?
November the 10th. If you're interested as well, I'd like to invite you and your co-host there to attend as my guests.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, that's very, very nice of you. That's very interesting.
But be prepared. We will work you.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, we need to do the work.
I'm not sure. I heard a little beep there. I'm not sure. Did Don, do we have a caller by any chance? No? Okay. Okay. All right. Well, close, but no. Cigar on that one. I don't hear Odin. If Odin is here, I'd definitely like him to come in and ask a couple of questions to Robert.
Hello.
Oh, there's Odin.
Yeah, how are you?
Hi, Odin. Can everybody hear everybody? That's the first thing. Robert, can you hear Odin?
G'day, Odin.
Yes, hi. How you doing, Robert?
I do well, thanks.
Great, man. you know, it's good to be back again on Zero Point, and I've been listening really with rapt attention. I was a little afraid to do the exercises because I figured I might float away from the phone.
I did that yesterday on a radio show.
Yeah. Well, I was having a little more trouble just negotiating the logistics of keeping the phone in my ear and doing the exercises, but I actually had the same kind of thought. It's like, boy, I could get carried away pretty easily here and perhaps lose the phone.
Well, I have a headset on, so I'm all right.
Okay.
I could just float anywhere at this point.
When we spoke earlier, Robert just touched on one of the topics that you wanted to address, which was the Hall of Learning and future workshops. But
yeah.
Do you have a question that you'd like to ask Robert?
Well, I was just wondering what kind of feedback he's gotten on the energy work and through the workshops, and how people are liking it.
People are blown away by the energy work. Energy work has been in all of my books, have been segments of energy work since the first book, Astrodynamics, has sections in there. But the new book, Energy Work, is the first time I've written a dedicated book on it and done it justice. And everybody's absolutely loving it. Nobody wants to go home.
Okay.
They don't want it to end.
You have to open a hotel.
Well, we started up, this is the online workshops. We've got like 45 people in each workshop. But we've actually started up an area called Graduate House, which is like another online area where we maintain the private forums and they can ask questions and get answers. And, we keep the graduates together that way. It's,
So if you're a member and you work, if you work through it on a regular basis, you can go to various levels in the system.
I'm sorry, could
you? You go through various levels. You work through various levels in the system. Is that how it works?
Yes, we do. We start out with the basics in the right beginning, just working with the hands and the feet and simple things, and we progressively work through the rest of the body. And when we've covered that, we start working at higher levels, working through the chakras. And then we start doing more complex things, different, more complex energy movements. And then we build up to things like we teach how to work in altered states, how to induce an altered state of consciousness, and start working with the higher levels of consciousness, including
right.
astral projection.
Another thing I wanted to ask you, Robert, is about the healing and self-healing and how much focus you have on that. I know there must be a lot of interest by a lot of people in that.
It's starting up. Well, the online workshops we've got now, the Hall of Learning, is only the one. It's a big one, 5 weeks of astral projection. It contains, of course, energy work. But I'm going to North Carolina, where my partners are based. My partner's Bob Felix. He worked at the as an audio engineer for the Monroe Institute and knew Robert Monroe since the late 70s. And he was instrumental in developing a lot of the HemiSync products, including the Journeys Out of Body series, which we use in the course. And we're partners in the Hall of Learning, and we use the HemiSync products there. And so you're getting expert guidance from Bob Felix concerning the use of HemiSync, and plus all of my expert guidance from all of my techniques and methods. And,
how do you integrate those two systems, or are they not two systems? Are they really just aspects of the same system?
Yeah, well, we don't particularly use the Monroe systems of doing things, their instructions, but we use the HemiSync altered state inducing sound, minus any guidance on there. There's nothing wrong with their system. You know, we use my systems for this. But as for self-healing and that, we're about to create some workshops in November for a basic energy work course. Because, as I say, we've only got a 5-week intensive at the moment. We're going to create a 101 energy work course, and there'll be a 202 intermediate one, and then that will branch off into healing and self-healing.
Mm-hmm.
And a fair bit of the book, Energy Work, is devoted to self-healing.
Mm-hmm.
because how this works is any healer in the world, any healing system does the same thing, and you could even say antibiotics do the same thing. They attempt to stimulate a healing response in the physical body mind of the patient. So if you're giving healing to someone, that healing energy you're projecting, you're trying to stimulate a healing response in the body of that person, the patient. Now, in my experience, if the patient themselves is taught how to do tactile imaging and to use various techniques, they can actually, because they can feel their own body where nobody else can do that but the patient, they can reach inside themselves with their body awareness senses and give healing to their internal organs and joints at specific areas of the spine, say. They can identify a particular disc or vertebrae or nerve and do energy work on that area. And we also apply imagination and some work with the elements to using the healing powers of elements and imagination to shape and tune the energy to a different quality. And you can get an amazing healing response from your own body doing it this way. There's nobody else in the world, there's no healer or medical intuitive that can reach inside your body and feel it the way you can.
Interesting. Yeah.
So you can feel your knee and you can feel the damaged part if you've got an injured knee, say, and you can move your awareness deep inside and pinpoint, target the damaged areas and work on it with energy work. And this type of energy work also connects you with your higher self, and particularly in the book there, I encourage people to do this, to work with the intention and work with their higher self, because your physical body is capable of amazing feats of self-healing if it's stimulated, if that healing response is stimulated in the right way.
Really interesting. Yeah.
And my approach is to use everything to try and trigger that healing response, including affirmations, intentions, and the connection inside of you with the divine aspect of you, the higher aspect of you, to get that on your side working for you. And we are, this system is only really in its infancy, but we're getting amazing responses from self-healing.
Well, that is really interesting, very fascinating.
It's exciting.
I was thinking the acronym IBE might apply to that.
IBE?
Instead of OBE.
Huh.
Inner body
experience.
Yeah.
It is really, it is like projecting yourself inside of your body into the, and moving yourself through the body, because you are only really a point of consciousness.
Mm.
Yeah. It seems entirely consistent with the whole idea that, you know, throughout history that there have been people with psychic and developed powers to heal others and to see inside of others. Well, it would seem logically consistent to me that we possess these capacities ourselves. It's just we don't know ourselves and we haven't been educated to know ourselves in these ways, and that what you're describing, I think, really is a more systematic way of organizing things that I think a lot of people know intuitively and have experiences that confirm this intuitively, but they don't have a system to understand it. And I think it's quite consistent with my own experiences and those of others that I've read.
Yes,
and the tactile imaging system can be applied to anything you do. I mean, at the moment, I mean, there are medical intuitives and sensitives out there, empaths out there. I'm an empath myself. You can feel what another person's feeling, and if they've got an injured back, for example, you'll feel the pain in your own back. But you'll feel a reflection of the pain, but that's about all you'll feel. It's a temporary condition. You can't really go into your own back or into the other person's back and really feel that damaged area to get a really in-depth feel for it. You can,
so I can sort of get my hands around the liver or the kidneys or the whatever the organs and the bones and the muscles, and I can go in there with my mental polariscope sort of and do microsurgery or whatever healing on those areas. That's really a fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you're doing that level of healing, and that's absolutely possible, like I've done that myself with giving healing to people. I do a lot of healing. and is to actually go inside of them and see their organs. Using the methods I teach in energy work, apart from just the flow of energy, is using specific tools and intentions, and particularly using the elements. If you're working on a pair of kidneys, for example, and you go inside them, and you will often see those kidneys, and the color of the kidneys will denote their condition and the shape, of course, and the size of them. But the kidneys are heavy water-based element, and if you go in there and connect with those kidneys and you pull a lot of water element into you first, you have to absorb it first, and then you project a lot of water element into a person's kidneys, you will always improve the health of those kidneys.
Mm. Fantastic. Are you going to have this available on the Hall of Learning? Because I know people ask me, you know, about healers and where they can go to get this or that done. It'd be fascinating if they could learn how to do that themselves.
Yes, well, these methods are given in my book, Energy Work, which is out. It's available now. And as I said, for the basic energy work, my new release as well, the Mastering Astral Projection audio CD set, talks you through the energy work with binaural altered state-inducing sound to help you go through it. It's designed for astral projection, but the energy work is the same. But the book talks you through the practices of raising and projecting basic elemental forces.
Do you have an online class set up for that?
We don't at the moment. We're actually going to start filming this. The online workshops are heavily video-based. You need broadband. It's just like attending a live workshop, only it's better because you can play the video presentations whenever you like at your own time, and you can replay them as necessary.
Mm.
Whereas if you're limited to a particular time or you have to attend a class, it's much more difficult. It's very user-friendly.
Yeah. Robert, I have to ask you this because this really struck me is that for those who have a more skeptical bent out there, I wondered if you would share your story about what happened when your mother, who was very ill, decided to undertake your system. Would you mind sharing that story?
Which story?
With your mother when she was diagnosed with cancer in terms of her response to your system?
I remember my mother coming home after she was diagnosed with cancer, and she went into town with my sister, and she came home and she was quite pickled. They called into the pub on the way home, and Mum had had, you know, a few half pints of what did she used to drink? Milk stout, I think it was. And I remember her coming in, and she was standing there, you know, quite, you know, waving a little bit from side to side. And she says, you know what, Robert? She said, I've had a lovely day, apart from being diagnosed with cancer. Which she poo-pooed. But, yeah, that was my mum. Yeah, pragmatic to the last, yeah.
Robert, can I ask you just sort of a question that's been bothering me about how to think about integrating these various parts of ourselves. I was wondering about how you would describe, or if there is a way of describing, the differences between an NDE versus an OBE versus lucid dreaming versus astral projection. Are these all aspects of one energy system, or are they initiating different parts, or just how do you see that working?
Well, the near-death experience and astral projection are one and the same thing, in my opinion. What do you have here? A near-death experience is a very powerful astral projection, the most powerful of all you can have, because when you physically die, there's a massive transfer of vital energy into the astral body. The astral body is usually evicted first, and when the physical body dies, this massive transfer of energy makes it very, very solid and enduring, and people have vivid experiences in that area in real time and afterwards. But an astral projection is the same as that, but without as much energy, and energy is everything when it comes to astral projection. If you are low-powered during an astral projection, you'll tend to, you know, you'll have vision problems, you won't be able to see properly, you'll have movement problems, a host of problems that arise because you don't have enough energy. But the more energy you have, the more vivid and powerful the experience is, and the stronger the memory is. As for lucid dreaming, it's difficult to tell an astral projection from a lucid dream, and I'll tell you why. Inside the experiences themselves, you'll find there are different properties to the environment. For example, if you're having a lucid dream or a dream, and you become aware, you find you can just walk across the room normally. And you can sit down, you know, movement, and that is quite normal. But if you're having an astral projection and you come out of your body and you're standing there in your bedroom and you want to move across the room and you try to move across the room, you'll find you won't move. It's like your legs are sort of moving around, but they're like glued to the floor because you don't really have legs and they don't work, but there's no, you know, the same way. And you have to learn how to move in real-time astral projection, which is like being a spirit in the physical world. And you have to learn to imagine and feel that the other side of the room is downhill and you're wearing rollerblades. And you will find you move with your mind and you feel yourself moving and you move. But then when you want to stop, you'll get to where you want to be and you feel like you're going to stop. But you'll keep moving for several feet and you might move through the wall and come back. You know, and you'll feel yourself moving through the wall. And when you enter solid matter, you'll find it's brightly lit on the inside, a brick wall. You'll see all the little molecules in there moving around. Like, remember that movie Ghost?
Yeah.
And when Patrick Swayze moves through that person in the hospital, as he moves through, you get the special effects of the CGI of all these molecules. And that's what it's like to put your head in the solid matter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But they're different properties. But the problem here is to absolutely tell the difference between them. If you are trying to have an astral projection and you're aware of all the symptoms and things like this, your dream mind can recreate exactly everything. You can dream that you've woken up and gone to the bathroom, gotten back into bed and laid down, and then start experiencing vibrations and rapid heartbeat and typical OBE exit sensations. You will dream that you are projecting out of body. Everything will seem very, very real. And you are having a real-time OBE, but the whole thing has been a dream.
That's
because
nice.
You've recreated it. It's tricky.
Hmm.
But there's a lot of crossovers between the dream environment and the astral environment. There are many, many crossovers. And I think you're talking about here, this is one and the same thing. You're talking about like a different frequency, a different scale here, a different.
Right.
I think everything is connected, I think.
What are you calling? I just want to ask one other brief thing, if it's okay, Jim. This work being done now, I think it's by a Russian scientist, I've forgotten his name, but Lynn McTaggart's working with him on an intention experiment where he has discovered or rediscovered, and the Russians have known this for probably centuries, that the body actually emits photonic light. And it's, I guess, suppose the physical counterpart of the light body or the astral body, whatever you want to call it. Now, do you experience this also when you get inside the body? You mentioned the light, that it's lit up. And I'm just wondering if that was the, sort of the same thing that they've discovered.
You know, it is different inside of a body. I have put my head into a body a number of times before when I'm in the correct state for doing that, and I've moved partly out of my body and moved my head into another person.
Mm.
And when I do that, looking inside another person, it's gobsmacking. What you see is like another universe. It is like you suddenly look up at the stars and you can see galaxies and star clusters. It's like this amazing kaleidoscopic energy inside there. It's absolutely gobsmacking.
Is that a technical term, Robert? Gobsmacking?
Yeah, a very technical term, yeah, from Australia. Yeah, it's stunning. When you look inside of there, because, I mean, the human mind does not exist in the brain. The human memories do not exist in the brain. This is scientifically provable. Scientists don't know where they are. You know, they can remove 50% of the brain in a hemispherectomy. And a good friend of mine's a brain surgeon, by the way. We worked together on this, and 50% of the brain, and you don't lose any memories. Areas of the brain are associated with short-term recall. Some areas are associated with long-term recall. If you damage those areas of the brain, you will of course interfere with the recall of memories. But the memories themselves, they don't know where they are stored. And it is believed by many, and myself included, that the mind and the memories are superimposed over the entire physical body. And my work in core image work has proven to me over the years, working with groups and that memories can exist in any part of your body, in the knee, in your stomach. It's quite common, for example, when doing energy work in a group, but I'm taking people through working through the base center or the heart center is another common one, and you're working on the chest area with a big slicing action, and bang, I've got people left, right, and center, you know, bursting into tears with all these memories coming back, you know, recovered memories of traumas that have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
also,
sounds like Blavatsky's Akashic body or astral. Higher astral body where these memories are stored, as far as I can recall from what I've learned from the Theosophical teachings, that the real memory is in the astral body, the patterns, not in the physical brain itself. The brain is simply a mechanism or an instrument for focusing these energies and memories.
Well, the brain is like a transceiver. It's like it sends and receives between the subtler and the physical. But I mean, memories also exist in, or a type of memory also exists in physical organs. There's a weird phenomenon that occurs when people have a blood transfusion, which is effectively an organ transplant. And when they have organ transplants, they will often pick up not so much memories, but they will pick up like addictions and things,
yes.
And on from the organ donor, they you know, there was some kind of a transference occurs, at least in part. And these are not like memories coming across, but there's something from the other person comes across with the physical body, with the body part that's been transplanted.
Yeah, that's what Christopher argues in terms of. Actually, that phenomenon is quite well documented in terms of heart transplants, where people will suddenly acquire tastes and predilections for things that they've never had previous to the surgery, which actually belong to the person whose heart that they received. I would say that I wish Christopher was here to talk with you, Robert, because I know he'd be fascinated by what you're saying, because he essentially subscribes to a holographic model of memory and doesn't believe that memory is in the brain. Well, I, as you say, I think it's funny how so many scientists and psychologists and psychiatrists talk in a way that they think that memory is in the brain and that it's been documented that it isn't, but it's precisely the opposite. You know, that Carl Lashley, the famous neurologist, studied memory for 35 or 40 years, was searching for the site of memory at the so-called engram, and he said eventually that he kept cutting bigger and bigger pieces of experimental animals' brains out, and he said that after 40 years his research had documented that memory was impossible because, you know, it just kept cutting bigger parts out and there was still memory. And that led actually to Carl Prebram, who was a student, suggesting that, well, memory isn't really stored in the brain. It's distributed holographically throughout the brain. And I would say, I think you're right. I think it's distributed holographically throughout the body.
Yeah, I'd say extending on that from my experience. Now this is, since I started working in workshops in 2003 using tactile imaging techniques, which are quite new, and by working on them, the number of people I've come across during group sessions that have had recovered trauma memories suddenly spring up into their mind like they've just happened. And we could be working on the base center around the hips or in the heart area, any part of the body, and you get people having memories that they had no recollection of for the last 35 years, and they suddenly springs up like it had just happened. And, you know, and we're working on the chest area, for example, nowhere near the head. And it seems that the particularly trauma memories, and you could say these are centered in the heart. Obviously, these areas here, these are usually emotional-type memories.
Right.
And but the physical placement in the body there, these memories could said to be placed in a higher astral vehicle, an energy body repository for memories. It could be said to be in a field which superimposes our body, but it's also a physical component there in the physical body. All of these questions are correct.
Mm.
All of these directions are correct. And one thing I do know for absolute sure, we do not know anywhere near as much about this as we would like to do.
Yeah, absolutely. It must be a huge subject, especially if a person has reincarnated 10,000 times. They probably have a lot of memories stored up in all those lives that they lived.
Well, that's another layer entirely, which can indeed affect a person in the now. A real physical person, they can have, you know, traumatic memories from another life, which are coming through and causing physical problems in the now.
Yeah. Well, I just remembered this fellow's name. This doctor, Russian doctor, Konstantin Korotkov, I think. Korotkov, he's studying the photonic emissions, and he says that it's not just humans that have these photonic emissions, but that all matter, you know, water, minerals, plants, animals have, are really light bodies in a way, but every cell sort of radiates this photonic energy. Can be actually measured by some machinery that he's developing, very sensitive machinery, these wavelengths.
Well, light is energy. I mean, the human body gives off quite powerful electromagnetic fields. I was reading in a book, I think it was Masaru Emoto, and his Messages in Water, I think it was, that it's been the human heart, the electromagnetic field around that has been measured like at about 30 feet. And the limitation in their measurement has been the size of the chamber they use. Huh. But it's quite a powerful field. So, I mean, energy is energy, whether it's visible light. It's only visible to us because we have eyes. But that's not a visible light, the photonic light, is it, at that level?
Do you want to respond to that, Odin? I'm not sure. Oh, have we lost Odin?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, you're thinking.
I'm sure you get what I mean. It's not important, but it's...
Okay.
Well, we all emit lots of energies, and we interact in many, many different ways that we are only barely aware of. I mean, energetically, telepathically, in 100 different ways.
Yeah, one of my favorite quotes...
You just got me going into a meditative state here, trying to sort out all of these amazing new ideas. And I think what I'm getting from Robert, and I have to leave a little bit because I just got a call, so held me up, is that the integration, as you mentioned, Jim, is really the most interesting and useful part of this whole thing. To my way of thinking, is that you don't have to give up your Tai Chi, you don't have to give up your yoga classes, but you're just enriching everything by finding this kind of a reality underneath it all.
You continued. I mean, what I've discovered here, Odin, is a missing link here. And over the last 15 years, I've struggled and I've put together a workmanlike system of energy work and self-healing. There are other systems out there which do other things like Tai Chi and Qi Kung. And my work on the energy work here is a missing link which makes everything else work.
Well, I think it's really wonderful what you're doing, and I want to congratulate you.
Thank you.
and the Felix folks down in the Hall of Learning, and I really look forward to hearing more about how this is going to develop and people get involved in it. It's just great. It's what people are looking for, some way to help themselves and to find a reality behind it.
The self-healing particularly, this system that I'm teaching now is in its infancy. It is constantly under review and experimentation. I'm getting feedback in left, right, and center from all these different things working and my students. I always teach our students here, if you have an idea, experiment with it. Find out if it works. And if it does work, let us know and we'll include it in the work. And a lot of the ideas in my energy work book, if you look in the acknowledgement section, have come from students of mine in classes I've taught over the years. And this is a system which works so well. And this is literally for the planet, this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is for everybody to make their lives better.
Yeah, I'm very impressed by the open-ended nature and it's very undogmatic in your approach, Robert. It seems that you're genuinely searching for to further refine your understanding of these things and to draw on whatever people can give you, which is I think is really commendable.
Well, I'm glad you both said that because I'm in it for the science and the adventure. It's in me to do this, but I want to make it very, very clear that I'm not trying to replace any other system. Even the Monroe system is an excellent system of working with Hemisync and altered states at the Monroe Institute. But you'll find I did a workshop at the Monroe Institute a few months ago, and the inclusion of my energy work in the Monroe system, it stops the majority of the click-out problem, which is huge.
Mm.
And clicking out, about 40% of most classes, or 40% of the time, a person will click out. They'll start a session using Hemisync, and they will lose touch after a couple of minutes. They'll click out, basically lose consciousness, and then they will click back in at the end of it. And the inclusion of the energy work almost eliminates that.
Right. Well, this idea of yours that you're applying to all of the is stimulating using the physical senses that we already have to act as a focal point or a basket or whatever you want to call it, an energy direction, so that you can go to different parts. Unless you tell the body, hey, I want to look at you here. Then the mind really is wandering loosely all over the place, and I think people would just go to sleep lots of the times instead of actually doing what they set out to do.
Well, it's very powerful. So it gives you more energy flow. When you're working in altered states, it's like an out-of-body experience. Energy is everything. Your level of consciousness is very dependent upon your level of energy, and if you don't have enough energy, you'll tend to click out, fall asleep, lose consciousness, and various other things.
Well, you remind me of the Hermetic Masters, right? Who, what's that oracle? Says, man, know thyself.
Yeah.
Man, know thyself.
Yeah.
I mean, was that Socrates?
Well, it was at the Temple of Apollo. It's attributed to Socrates, but it was actually engraved over the Temple of Apollo in Greece is sort of the essential hermetic aphorism. It's such a simple sentence, but it, I mean the whole sentence is "Man, know thyself, and thou wilt know the universe and the gods."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a beauty.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I've got to run. I guess got a call. I've got to catch up on an appointment.
Yeah, I have a hermetic
roof. Unfortunately, but I would like to stay with us for a couple more hours.
Yeah. Okay, it could go on for days.
Yeah. Well, Jim, thank you for inviting me. And,
yeah, well, thanks for joining us, Odin.
Robert, wonderful talking to you.
Yeah.
And have a great further discussion on this, and I'm listening on the archive.
It's been nice talking to you, Odin. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Yes, sir. Look forward to it. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye, Odin.
Bye-bye.
Well, Robert, before you go, do you have a couple more minutes?
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. It was a little bit difficult to hear there. I don't know if you said that you had to go soon, too. But I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. Going right back to the beginning, you mentioned that you had had out-of-body experiences as early as age 4. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, what was the nature of the experience? Were you having these when you were asleep or when you were awake, or what was that about?
My first memory of an out-of-body experience was I'm laying there in bed. I'd just gone to bed, and all of a sudden I felt this buzzing, sort of humming vibration through my body, and I felt a bit of a falling sensation, and I floated up out of my body and started moving through the house like feet first. The first couple of times I did it, it was like my whole bed was moving through the house, and this started happening regularly, and I mean, I was a kid. I had a lot of fun. I mean, these were powerful, real-time astral projections, and, you know, I'm playing in the neighborhood and teaching myself how to fly and all kinds of stuff, and it was, like, just a lot of fun. And this went on for years. And, and I continued having spontaneous OBEs. When I first started, I was having them every night for years. And I remember I could just go to bed and I'd think about what I'd done, you know, I'd been doing in previous nights and that. I'd just think about coming out of body and I'd come out. It was that simple.
Wow.
I just expressed it, I'd wish to come out, and I'd pop out of body really simply. And, and this happened for many years. But when I taught myself to induce it, and, you know, deliberately, that's a whole different ball game.
Yeah.
And that took me quite a few months of hard work every day. I had to learn how to achieve a deep state of relaxation, to achieve an altered state of consciousness, which is, you know, a clear, relaxed mind. And then I think I was using a book my mother had given me. I was about 21 at the time, by Lobsang Rampa.
Oh, yeah.
This is going back a ways.
Yeah.
And one of his books, I think it's called You Forever, is on metaphysical techniques about clairvoyance, astral projection and that. And I basically used his techniques there, which was simply you lay there and achieve a deep state of relaxation, and then you feel yourself floating out of your body. And that's basically all I did. And, of course, the first couple of successful astral projections I did then were quite traumatic. I'm talking major vibrations, and no matter how much I lay it on, this doesn't happen to everybody. Only a small, but probably 10% of people will get fairly strong exit sensations the first couple of times they induce them. But, I mean, I'm talking about vibrations through the body that felt like I was strapped to an industrial vibrator.
Yeah.
You know, one you would vibrate concrete with.
Yeah.
And my heart was racing like about 500 beats a minute. It felt like it was going to explode. The continual falling sensation, lots of pressures on my head. And in the middle of all this, I sort of buzzed out of body. But now, they rapidly reduced in intensity subsequently after that. And I think what it is, I mean, astral projection occurs every night, every time everybody sleeps. It's a very natural part of life. We drift out of our body, and generally a person will, you know, emulate the sleep state, and you see the astral body asleep a couple of feet above their physical body, often at night time. But when you have the presence of awake consciousness in a very natural mechanism like that, it throws a big spanner in the works and causes a lot of energetic problems. As well as belief system problems. I mean, there's a belief in, all of these things combined together can make it a bit difficult to get out. Now, most people won't experience anything as heavy as I experienced, but it's good to be prepared for that just in case it happens, because, like, with the rapid heartbeat, it's not your physical heart beating. It's your heart chakra pumping energy to produce the projected double. It's not your heart chakra, your heart, not your actual physical heart doing it. So, there's nothing to be afraid of. You've just got to kind of cross your mental fingers and go a bit on faith here if you get, powerful exit sensations. It's like probably about 10% of people in my experience that get fairly significant exit sensations. And even if I really lay it on and say how powerful they can be, people come back to me afterwards and say, wow, you laid it on and said they were powerful, but you didn't say they were that powerful. Because a lot of people, even though they've been warned, when they start getting out of body, they say, whoa, this is way too real. And they panic.
Yeah.
And when they panic,
very frightening.
Yeah, they prolong, they stall a mechanism which would normally buzz them out of body. Their mind becomes too active. They get scared. They start emoting. So they're half out of body and they stall the process.
Okay.
And they're stuck halfway out of their body. And, of course, the sensations then intensify. If you just relax into it and let it happen, it's effortless. There's a nice, comfortable buzzing vibration, a fluttering, rapid pulsing in the chest, a falling sensation. These are the typical OBE exit sensations. And you will buzz comfortably out of your body. But if you panic or get scared or emote during the exit, of course, it's like throwing a big spanner in the works and you can cause it to, you know, start shuddering at the seams as you're trying to separate with all these emotions. Now, a lot of people, you, for example, given what you've told me when we did the early exercises, if you were feeling sensations in your brow and your head just by working on the hands, what that tells me is you are a naturally creative, psychic, intuitive person. And you would, when you have an astral projection, you would tend to project out from the head area rather than the heart area. Now, if you project out of the head or the brow, from the brow or the crown, you find you will pop out with hardly any, sometimes with no sensations at all. You will just pop out of your body, and often you will either find yourself in a tunnel or a tube, like a big water slide, the tunnel or tube effect going into the astral planes, or you may find a large vortex. You ever seen the TV series Sliders?
No, I haven't.
Stargate?
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Okay, you know that big portal they go through?
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine something about a bit smaller than that, about 4 or 5 feet across. You come out of your body, and in your room, you find this watery blue vortex swirling around. And I've had people come up to me, and say, Robert, I got out of my body and there was this scary blue vortex in my room. What is it? If you don't know, it can be scary. I mean, but what that is a portal. That's the portal to the astral plane.
Oh, okay.
And if you dive into that vortex, you find yourself in the tube, that water slide effect, which will tend to flip you down like a big water slide. It's quite a trip. And it will deposit you somewhere in the astral planes, which is usually well lit and comfortable, and you can enjoy the trip.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, you're saying this because when you're talking about it, it's not actually your physical heart pounding, because before I even knew anything about astral projection, I had a couple of experiences of being out of my body. And the first time was relatively... it was relatively benign. I sat up. That's not the only way I can explain it. I sort of rose up. I was lying down. I rose up in a seated position almost and started to float. But it lasted only for a couple of seconds. But the second time, what you were describing about intense energy, I mean, it was like being shaken and vibrating at this incredible rate and heart racing and everything you described. And I just went sort of straight up in the air above my body. I could actually see my physical body in the bed.
Yep.
And but I didn't go anywhere. I ended up going back in rather quickly. So and other than being hit in the head one time so hard that I actually was outside of my body and could see it, those are the only times I think I've been conscious of being out of my body. But it was actually, I found it very frightening. It was actually during a period when I was going through a lot of emotional stress when I had these experiences too. So,
well, the speed of those experiences there, and keep in mind, as I said, you're most likely to come out of the head area,
mm-hmm.
but you're also capable of other types of exits as well. And in that time there, you were probably more heart-center focused,
right.
And you came out from the heart area. But keep in mind that when you have an astral projection, you do not actually leave your physical body.
Right.
You never, ever leave the physical body. The original copy of your mind and spirit never leaves your physical body while it lives. An energy copy is projected out of you during an astral projection.
Oh, that's very interesting. That's an interesting way of putting it.
And this is actually provable if you are, you can be awake in your physical body mind, albeit partly or fully paralyzed, and if you are doing energy work at the time, you can develop astral sight and astral hearing, which means you can see into the astral through your closed eyelids into the room around you. And I had the unique experience once many years ago of seeing my projected double and actually connecting with my connected double. And that tipped me off to what was going on. I experimented with that. And over the years, I've exhaustively tested this, and this is what's happening. And this is also what causes a lot of the problems. You know, why astral projection is so difficult, because this is what I call the mind split effect. And it's fundamental to all types of OBE, including near-death experience. And this also applies to clairvoyance, meditation, you name it. Any kind of altered state work applies to this. In that when you project out of body, I'm going to say it's related to this, it's affected by these principles. I mean, when you project out of body, your body generates an energy copy. It's like the RAM in a computer when it's turned on, that only exists while you power up and create that energy copy of yourself. And the instant it separates from the physical body, even a millimeter, your mind splits, basically, that's one way of putting it. And this copy functions independently from that moment onwards. It's not aware that of the other copy in your physical body mind. You can be awake in your physical body mind after a projection has occurred, and you can still be thinking and actively doing energy work and things in your physical body mind while your astral double is active in the astral around you. And if you look the fundamentals of the mind split, you have you and your physical body mind, let's say with the expanded effort component there. Your astral body can be active exterior to you independently. Your dream mind can also be active at the same time. That is three copies of you functioning simultaneously. That's the fundamental, the basics of the mind split effect. And it also hints at why they're difficult to remember, because if you look at the eventual storage mechanism we have in the mind, that regardless of where memories are physically stored, we have a mental process of storing memories. We are habitually trying to store conscious memories only. To a less extent, you know, some people remember some of their dreams, and we will store those as well. But astral projection memories, there's no precedent for that. People have very few of them, so we're not trying to store those. And you've got one mechanism, one memory, one conscious memory, and you have two or three separate memory streams for the same time period. If you put it down on paper, three streams of memory experience for the same time period, you have one mental mechanism in the mind for storing those memories. And what you're looking at here is chaos, because if they are stored, they were normally the strongest memory will overwrite the other ones, and that's what's recalled. Or you will end up with a mixture of bits and pieces of each, which are just tagged together as they sort of fall into the mind.
Wow, that's a fascinating explanation. I have never heard anything quite like that. That's
It actually makes a lot of sense.
It does.
It's practical as well, Jim. If you work with the mind split, you can find ways around the problems. I mean, the biggest problem, OBE, astral projection, is child's play. Anybody can do it after 5 minutes instruction. I mean, you do it every night every time you sleep. Everybody projects out. Animals project out, cats and dogs. I've sat there many, many times and watched my cats and dogs and children project out of body. It seems to be something inherent to all life forms. And now, but the problem is, of course, if you do it consciously. Now, given the logical memory download problems, once you have two or multiple memory streams for the same time period, and knowing that the strongest memory is the one which makes the final wrinkle in the memory, if you like, you start working with that. And one of the secrets to it is early astral projections, keep them very, very short,
okay.
10 seconds out of body,
okay.
And then dive back into your physical body, just look at where it is and feel yourself falling into it, passionately shouting your success. I mean, pick a couple of key words out of the experience. I mean, get out of body, quick look around, look at your hands, watch them melt. Your hands will melt like white ice under a blowtorch during an astral projection. It's a fascinating phenomena. And anything, and just a couple of key words, say, my hands melted, and shout that passionately as you dive back into the body, and then your eyes will open and you'll remember that. But you can't trust the memories. They're fickle. I mean, you can say, wow, what a wonderful experience. I'll never forget that. Forget what? It's gone. You know, like dream memories, they're really infuriating. You wake up in the morning, you've had a wonderful dream, and you remember it, and then it's gone. But so the first, then the next thing you do is when you get out, when you come back to your body and you remember it, is you reach for a pen while you start verbalizing the keywords immediately. So as soon as you come back conscious in the physical body, you would say, hands melted, while you're reaching for a pen, hands melted, and then you write down hands melted and a couple of key words from the experience.
Right.
And the key words form an association, if you understand memory, which I'm sure you do, an association to the full memory.
Right.
It's like targeting it on a database. I mean, if you don't have the right coding on a computer database, you'll never find it. But once you've got the address, it's like the keywords are the address on the database of where it's stored. And then you look at the keywords, hands melted, and you think about it, hands melted, and you look at your hands, and then bang, the memory comes back. And then you remember the whole experience, and you can write it down. But in the first second or two of regaining consciousness is crucial, and that's probably where about 99% of astral projection memories are lost in the first couple of seconds of regaining consciousness. They just slip out of the mind. So if you train yourself to verbalize the instant you become conscious, have a pen and paper right by your hand so you can scribble down a couple of key words, and you maximize your chances of success. And you can see where this is going. You add all these different little things together about a bit of energy work and the mind split effect and the memory download effect and that, and you could improve your chances of having astral projections.
Right. Yeah, I can, you know, I can see what you're saying about memory, because many years ago I used to keep dream journals, and it's the same thing in the sense that if you don't train yourself to, as soon as you awaken, begin to try to consolidate those memories, they dissipate very quickly, and yet if you do, you can begin to really, you know, retain much more of what's happened and remember it much more clearly.
Absolutely. I mean, dream recall in my books on astral projection, that's a part of it. You train yourself, you keep a dream journal, and you use the same process. You wake up in the morning, you sit on the edge of the bed, and immediately, I mean, put your mind on recall, and you start calling back any memories, any dream fragments you might have, and writing them down. Mm-hmm. And when you get a fragment, it usually flush itself out. And by training yourself to do that, you improve the download of subtle memories. So just by training yourself to remember more dreams and just putting a little bit of effort into that every morning for a few minutes, you will, you know, improve your chances of succeeding in having astral projection. In fact, because of these problems, a lot of people in meditation groups, people who meditate regularly, regularly experience astral projections but do not recognize them for what they are. And I'll tell you the symptoms here, if you or some of your listeners may relate to them. You are sitting there, maybe you're in a meditation group, you're being taught for a led meditation, and you're relaxing, of course, and you feel that cozy, heavy wave come over you as you slide into an altered state. Your physical body is actually going to sleep when that happens. And you get into this nice deep state, and then you feel this tingling surge of energy rapidly comes up through your legs and your torso, and you think, oh, something's happening, and then it goes away.
Mm.
Nothing happens. So you go back to your meditation. 5 or 10 or 15 minutes later, you feel another tingling surge of energy come back into you, and you think, oh, something's happening, but nothing does. So you go back with your meditation. But what's actually happened here is the first tingling surge of energy you feel coming up through you is your astral body being generated and separating.
Oh.
And the second tingling surge you feel is your astral body returning. But you've lost the memory completely, so all you feel is a slight energetic effect, and the astral body will slip out very smoothly if you are in a good meditative state and you've got a clear mind. And at the instant it starts to separate, the millisecond it comes out of alignment with your physical body-mind, it's operating independently, so once it starts to project smoothly out of you, you can lose touch with that while it's out of body, and if it comes back and the memory of that experience fails to download, you have no way of knowing that an astral projection took place.
Wow.
That's, and this happens a lot.
Yeah,
I
have a real sense that what you're saying is probably true, that's a very interesting interpretation of that phenomenon, because it makes complete sense to me in that
you've experienced
sense.
That, haven't you?
I have, actually. I've always kind of wondered about that. You know, there are so many different aspects to this that as you say, I think, you know, as much as we know, we don't know so much, and there are so many different unanswered questions that are open to us, that it just sort of reminds us to be humble and to try to be open-minded about exploring all these different new ways of understanding things. I think your work is really, as I say, it's intriguing and it's provocative, and I was really impressed, as I say, by the immense practicality of it, and it seems to really provide a way of organizing, I think, a lot of experiences that people have that they don't understand.
Absolutely, and thank you for that. The next step in this understanding of what I just said there about the concerns meditation and astral projection. And we're just talking then about how people frequently project during meditation without knowing it. Now, the click-out problem when people begin a meditation and a 5 or 10 minutes into it, they lose consciousness, and you'll find they will come back to consciousness a few minutes before it ends, and they may be listening to a CD or something, but there's usually a large proportion of the meditation where they don't remember being conscious. And that can be, you can be having an astral projection at the same time, but your physical body-mind, your normal consciousness is still there. But what happens is when you start operating at an altered state of consciousness at a higher level, even though you're still physically conscious and you might be sitting up in a chair, for example, the same problem occurs with downloading an astral projection memory as downloading an altered state memory, because they're all happening at altered states. You have a similar memory download problem occurring there. And so afterwards, when you come back down to a normal level of consciousness at the end of it there, what you've experienced at the higher level of consciousness or deeper level of consciousness doesn't download. So you've got this big blank spot during your meditation. Now, there is a way to work around that particular one, which helps also to train you to have more reliable astral projections, and that is to use what I call my slight discomfort theory. And this actually explains why the early mediums of 100 years ago accomplished so much in their lives, apart from the fact they didn't have television and computers and lived simpler lives and practiced a lot more. They generally used uncomfortable chairs. They set up wooden stools and wooden chairs. And it's also why the yoga people who use the Zen practitioners and that and yoga practitioners that use the lotus or half lotus position,
right,
and they sit their legs crossed, you know, back straight on a mat of some kind or a little meditation stool, which is fairly uncomfortable. It has a slight discomfort involved, even if you're used to it.
Mm-hmm.
But that level of discomfort and little bit of tension in the joints and that, or if you're using a hard chair, that little bit of tension on your sitting bones, helps to keep the mind-body connection alive.
Oh.
So even though you're functioning at an altered state, you've got this mind-body connection. You're still aware of your physical body in a tactile sense.
Yes.
And as long as you're aware and you have that mind-body connection going, the memories will smoothly download into conscious memory. So you find positions using, I recommend, like, use a dining chair with a stiff back. I don't recommend using comfortable lounge chairs, reclining chairs. A lot of people, they meditate in a position which has a lot of almost sensory deprivation here. They are so comfortable, they can't feel their physical body, like in a float tank. And you will find the more comfortable you are, the more you will click out.
Okay. Yeah, that seems to be, that's consistent with my understanding of things.
I mean, it can be a simple matter. If you like to meditate laying down in bed, for example, which a lot of people do, which is fraught with danger, I mean, not danger, but of losing the memory of it.
Right.
Get a simple wooden board, like a kitchen cutting board, and put it under your heels.
Okay.
A little bit of discomfort there, and experiment with how much discomfort you need to keep yourself conscious. You may just need like a little wooden board under your hands or where your arms are resting. You may not need much. Just a little something to keep that mind-body connection alive, and you'll have better meditations, you'll remember the experiences, you'll have better lucid dreams and astral projections.
Yeah, of course.
And it's all related.
Yeah, of course, I think the Zen Roshis walk around with a big bamboo stick and whack people in the back, say, to remind them to keep that connection going.
Oh, yeah, well, that's a quite, my son does, who's also a psychologist, by the way, he does Zen, loves it, the whole form of it. And they actually do that. It's almost like self-hypnosis.
Right.
If they break concentration, they actually ask to be, you know, someone to hit them over the back to reinforce their break in discipline. And it's like a hermetic practice. I mean, you put a thick rubber band around your wrist, and every time you have a negative thought, you grab that rubber band, stretch it out, and ping your wrist.
Right.
Now, after you've done that a few times, it gets a bit tender. And, you know, and so it's like auto-suggestion, like self-hypnosis. I mean, anything that causes us pain, we tend to avoid. So if you're trying to change your attitude and thoughts to be more positive, and every time you have a negative thought, or if you're trying to give up smoking, for example, every time you feel the urge for a cigarette, you give yourself a ping on the wrist, it helps. It reinforces it.
Yeah. Well, Robert, we're coming up to a few minutes from the hour, and I wanted to wind up by making a few comments about Christopher's work. This was wonderful today, and I would invite you, if we can make the arrangements. I know Christopher would have loved to have talked with you today, and if we can have you back on at some point, we'd love to have you. I mean, I have so many more questions I want to ask you now, more questions now than when I began. And
we haven't even started talking about psychic self-defense, so that's another thing.
Exactly. That was one of the topics. That was psychic self-defense. I got to talk about that, and I was also very intrigued. And we'll leave this for the next time. But I was intrigued by your comment about virtual reality research and how some scientists have trying to suggest that this explains quote-unquote OBEs.
I know exactly what the research you're talking about, and I actually think I wrote a piece on that on my website. It actually supports astral projection.
Yeah, and that's exactly my interpretation to it. And I thought, boy, you know, that's something we could talk about for half an hour in and of itself. But as I say, we'd love to have you again.
Your book is Energy Work, your most recent book, and you have the audio CDs for to accompany the Mastering Astral Projection.
Mastering Astral Projection audio, yeah.
And your website is www.astraldynamics.com. This has been Robert Bruce, and we thank you for coming on. As I say, Christopher will definitely, when he listens to the tapes, I know he'll want to contact you and have you on again. So thanks for joining us on Zero Point and BBS Radio.
Well, thank you. It's been lovely coming here. I'll do it again sometime with you.
Okay, great. Thanks very much, Robert.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye now. That was Robert Bruce, as they say, and I would urge all of our listeners, if you are interested in what Robert had to say, please visit his website, because it's an excellent website. He has a lot of information on there. There's a lot of information that you can download from the website and explore his work. And as I say, I think today we found out that there are many more topics that we can discuss with Robert when Christopher returns to the program. I should say that, as I mentioned, this is Zero Point Radio, which is Christopher Holmes' program. Christopher is off today at his daughter's wedding. Just mention briefly, Christopher has a website at www.zeropoint.ca. He's a clinical and forensic psychologist, a friend of mine for the last 35 years, and in his work he has studied now for the past 30 years the mystical and esoteric teachings in quite great detail, comprehensively. And he relates the ancient esoteric and mystical teachings to modern ideas about psychology of consciousness and modern science, and has developed what I think is the most interesting model of consciousness that I'm familiar with. As I say, if you go to his website, excuse me, you'll find that the Zero Point teaching, I'll just read the Zero Point hypothesis that Christopher identifies, which is that living beings have zero point centers rooted into the grounds of being, and these are associated with the higher dimension physics and metaphysics of the human art. Such ideas are found within the secret doctrine of H.P. Blavatsky, esoteric Judaism and Kabbalah, Sufism, the teachings of the Dalai Lama, and other sources. And Chris goes on to say that he explores the individual's experience of self in terms of the physics and science and the metaphysics of the ancient metaphysical teachings. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice. But I would suggest that our listeners visit Chris's website and check out. He's got many books. I think he's up to six or seven now. And he has a couple of books on G.I. Gurdjieff and the Fourth Way teaching. He has a couple of books on Madame Blavatsky and the Secret Doctrine. And his most recent work is focusing on Madame Blavatsky. His latest manuscript, which hopefully will be out soon, is called God, Science, and the Secret Doctrine. And the subtitle is The Zero Point Metaphysics and a Holographic Space of H.P. Blavatsky. And there's not enough time to even begin to give an overview of what that work entails, but I think that those who have listened to the program hopefully will have found that Chris provides a very detailed, and in many ways a very difficult explanation of the nature of human consciousness and the self, and relates these on both a psychological and cosmological level. But as you begin to become familiar with the ideas, you begin to realize that this is a very rational and a very lucid understanding of both the nature of psychology and the nature of cosmology, and that the idea that these things are separate realms is in some ways an artifact, a misunderstanding in terms of our normal perception of these things, and that the nature of the self is in some very basic way tied to the nature of the universe, and that we are, as human beings, not just minds and bodies, as modern psychologists suggest, but rather we are multidimensional beings, and that we are rooted into the ground of the cosmos, and that there's some substratum on which everything is in a very real sense unified, and that as human beings we possess the capacity to know ourselves and to know the universe and the gods by developing our higher self and the faculties of higher faculties that come with that. I'm kind of babbling here because I'm trying to hurry through the last couple of minutes here and just give an overview of Christopher's work. As I say, he'll be back in 2 weeks from New Zealand. He's going to attend a theosophical conference and present on Madame Blavatsky and the Secret Doctrine. And I hope that you'll join us with Christopher from New Zealand and me from Toronto. And I hope that people will check out both Robert Bruce's work and Christopher Holmes's work. And I'd like to thank BBS Radio and Doug and Don Nelson for allowing us to present these shows on the Zero Point Teaching. This is a wonderful opportunity to reach out and communicate with people all over the world, and it breaks down a lot of barriers that exist because there's a fair amount of resistance to spreading these ideas amongst the certain powers that be. And I think for somebody like Christopher Holmes, it's been a long, strange trip in trying to get his ideas to market. So the Internet has provided him with a real democratic forum and one in which a lot of those obstacles don't exist. And we certainly appreciate BBS Radio, and we certainly appreciate the support of Doug and Don Nelson, that this has been a wonderful opportunity for us. I'm sort of not used to sitting here and talking by myself. I generally sit and talk with Christopher, and Don Nelson came on a couple of weeks ago and said, you know, it's so natural between you guys. And I told him, well, part of it's because we've been doing it for 40 years. Christopher and I have been friends for 40 years. So we've been having these conversations for a long time, and it's really our pleasure to present these ideas and to explore these ideas with like-minded individuals out there who are listeners to BBS Radio. Don, are you going to rescue me from this? Because I'm running out of things to say. Or